Good morning. I'm back. thanks, Rach. Jalen, on behalf of everybody, what are you watching that where they're saying chow? Are you deep? Oh, interesting. I thought you were back into Italian film or something. Deep in. Interesting. Okay, we have had a lot already this morning, but I want to give you literally 45 seconds to meet someone next to you, say how you ended up here. We'll keep it really brief. Some of you hate this, and so we're going to do it real quick. Ready? Go. Just real quick. Meet somebody. All right, everybody. Let's bring him. Your life is the sum total of the decisions that you make. I was thinking of how exactly to put that. End, right? Let's pray. No. I'm curious what your first instinct is when you hear that of the truth of that. Your life is the sum total of the choices you make. I think this is my assumption as I stand here is that for most of us we'd be like, yeah, that adds up. What's interesting is when you think about it, particularly the ancients probably would have had a very different reaction to such a statement. Think of things like the concept of fate that much of the ancient world took very, very seriously. This idea that life isn't so much about the decisions you make as much as sort of some preset plan that ultimately, whether you're Oedipus or Odysseus or whatever, like ultimately you're kind of bound to fall into what the fates have decided for you. And so we have these two, if not poles, you know, you can think of them as sort of like fate and maybe autonomy, right? Like which of those is more true? That sort of our lives are already set and what we do doesn't ultimately matter as much as that plan that pre-exists. And then this idea of, no, we are sort of captains of our own fate and what we do matters profoundly. What is a distinctly biblical response to that? What does Proverbs, how does the way of wisdom respond to sort of that question? And what we're going to talk about today, the big topic, you know, we've been going through these topics that Proverbs covers. The big topic today is decision making, is the importance of decisions in the book of Proverbs. And yet, to get into that topic, you first have to deal with this, what Proverbs really sees as a tension between the idea that in a biblical worldview, in a Christian worldview, we understand that God is sovereign, is the word that you'll hear used around a church like ours, that God ultimately is the one in control, that he is the one whose plans ultimately are unthwarted. And yet, Proverbs also says that each and every one of us are ultimately responsible for the decisions we make. This is one of those interesting paradoxes at the heart of Christian faith. And it's not the only one when you really step back from it. We are a people who believe in a God who is three persons, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, and yet so perfectly in unity that our fundamental proclamation biblically is that God is one. figure that one out, right? We believe that when Jesus came, he came as God incarnate, which is to say he was 100% divine and yet 100% human. And as the kids say, the math ain't mathing on that one, right? Like, figure that one out, right? Like, what are we talking about there? We believe in, I wrote a few of these down. We believe that even as followers of Jesus, that there is this sense in which we remain sinners, imperfect, prone to failure, prone to wander from him. And yet, in the eyes of God, because of what Christ has done, we are righteous. We belong to God. We are part of the family of God. We have been, in some sense, incorporated into who God is by his Spirit, and yet we remain in these sinful bodies. We talk about often here this idea that even when it comes to time, that right now the era of the story of God that we are living in has this sense that the end has already come, that the end has already begun in, again, what we'll talk in depth about next week, in the death and resurrection of Jesus. And yet, we await the final chapter when Jesus will come and make all things new. We talk about this as the already but not yet. We followers of Jesus, we love a good paradox. We love to hold this down. Or honestly, we should love paradox. A lot of us would deeply prefer a kind of certainty, a kind of nice, neat explanation for all of these things. And yet, as people of faith, right, faith by definition is different than certainty. Faith by definition means that there are unanswered questions, unanswered tensions that we are called to live with and to entrust to God. And right here at the outset of the Proverbs discussion of the importance of decisions is this paradox. Here's a couple of ways that it puts it. Nick just read these for us. Put that first slide up for me. Our plans and God's purpose. Okay, the righteousness of the blameless keeps his way straight, but the wicked falls by his own wickedness. Do you hear this? Human beings are absolutely responsible for the consequences of our decisions. The righteousness of the blameless is what keeps his way straight, whereas the wicked falls by his own wickedness. Right? This is not emphasizing some preset plan that, well, if you end up righteous, it's because God wanted you to be righteous, and if you end up wicked, well, then that's just God's purposes for you. No, this puts the responsibility on the one who has a choice between those two paths. And yet Proverbs will also say, many are the plans in the mind of a man, but it is the purpose of the Lord that will stand. It is the purpose of the Lord that will stand. Not just Proverbs, but the entire scriptures are unapologetic in saying there is nothing that thwarts God's ultimate purposes in this world. Not even the failure and fall and rebellion of humanity. Not even a bloody cross where God himself was put to death as a criminal. These things do not thwart the plan and purpose and will of God in this world. That God will ultimately have his way. And it says both of these things without some massive need to resolve them. It just puts them forward and says, this is part of what it means to walk wisely in God's world, is to hold both of these realities, to say that yes, there is a sense in which my decisions matter profoundly to the course of my life, to the course of this world, and not and yet, or and God is ultimately sovereign and is ultimately in control of all things, including my life. So that's where we have to start. We have to start in that tension, as difficult as it is, but to not name it. And so it's neither, right? It's neither complete human freedom and autonomy, nor just this sort of surrender to fate that we are called to. It is meaningful, actual responsibility that we bear while acknowledging the ultimate sovereignty of God. So when it comes to decisions, here's another thing that I think Proverbs would have us consider. A lot of times when I think of decision making, I think of the big decisions in life, right? For those of you who are in high school, right? There's this huge decision about what comes next, right? Am I going to college and am I doing something else? What's the right decision to make there? Many of you are students, and I spent many years in campus ministry, and you know, there are these big decisions you make during that season of life of potentially, you know, a lifelong mate, potentially what major, what career are you going to go into? And you feel the heaviness of that. And then all through life, when I think of decisions, I tend to think of sort of a road diverges in a wood, right? And which path am I going to take? And normally, when we think that way, we have this kind of yellow brick road. For those of us who are followers of Jesus, you're probably, yourself considered this, wrestled with this, or at least you've heard other people talk about this idea of God's will. Right? What's God's will for my life? What is God's will for my life? And normally, when we think of that, we think of when the road diverges in the wood, is it A or B? What is God's will for my life? Right? And then all of the accumulated turns that we could take, we want to be as close to God's will in those turning points as we can be. And I came to call this with students, I came to call this the yellow brick road concept of the will of God, that there is this one yellow brick road that will ultimately get you to Oz. And if you ever depart from it, right, there's, what are those things called? Flying monkeys, right? Like there's flying monkeys, there's horrible things that await you. And you know, you're gonna spend some amount of time hopefully getting back to that yellow brick road. And I think what Proverbs would call us to is to not have such a rigid view, especially within the tension that I just articulated, of what God's will is, and to acknowledge that God's will is far more wrapped up in who we are becoming than what we do, than where we live, than what specific job we take. That he is most concerned with, well, how is that decision going to be filtered through your understanding of who I am, and how will you actually engage it as one of my children and be changed by it and be aware of the ways in which I'm seeking to mold you into a certain kind of person. So we have things like the righteousness. Oh, next slide, sorry. A good name is to be chosen rather than great riches, and favor is better than silver or gold. A good name there is a good reputation, a good character. Someone that others would look at and see an image bearer of God. See Christ-likeness, to use the language of the New Testament. That is better than great riches. And favor, which is to say favor here, the emphasis really is favor from other people. Other people entrusting themselves to you, other people seeing you as a person of integrity and engaging with you in that way is better than silver or gold. You know what we also can think in the yellow brick road is, well, whatever decision I make, God's will surely is most wrapped up in the one that will lead to my greatest worldly success, right? Which one will lead to my vision of what I think the good life is? God, help me to choose well. And then wisdom, God comes in and says, well, what if a good name is better? And what if this path actually leads you to a kind of life that ends up with a kind of character that maybe this life that has more worldly success, more sort of superficial success to it, what if this is the path that I have for you? You see, often, as I put on this slide, our desires and God's agenda are not on the same page, unfortunately. I wish it was otherwise. You wish it was otherwise, right? Better is a little with righteousness than great revenues with injustice. These are the emphases that wisdom would have us take seriously. One way that I was thinking about this week is that God is far more concerned with our formation than the outcome of any given decision. How a decision and its consequences will form us is more important to him than like, oh good, right? Like I used to have this concept, like if God's will for my life is that I eventually end up in, you know, Dubuque, Iowa or something, like I've got to make sure that, you know, I end up there. As though that was the emphasis. As though where the path that wisdom would lead me to is a certain job, in a certain marriage, in a certain place, doing a certain mission with my life. Whereas if you think of, mean, those of you, we just did baby dedications, right? Like, if you think of being a parent, I can almost guarantee that for you, or I hope this is the case for you. If it's not, then it should be, and this is a good rebuke for you parents, right? I would hope that what's most important to us as parents is who our children are becoming far more than this or that decision that would get us to some concept that we have for them of their best life, right? That's what God is ultimately doing. That even the way that the scriptures often talk about this is that God is less interested in just giving us wisdom defined by the right information to make the right decision at any given moment. He's less interested in that than actually making us wise. And sometimes the making us wise is a stepping back with the kind of micromanaged idea of how God should be leading us and stepping back and saying, well, go ahead. I truly think that there are times where just, and I'm saying this mostly from my own experience and from walking with many, many people, where God steps back and says, oh, sweet son or daughter, make a decision. Make a decision. And the most important thing is I'll be with you and then we'll figure it out. And I've got purposes for you wherever you're going to end up. Right? Often quoted in such moments is Romans 8:28, which we did a nice deep dive in a couple months ago, but it's worth repeating because this comes up a lot in decision-making, right? Romans 8:28, if you're not familiar with it, this is probably the most misused verse that we Christians love to bring up at all kinds of times. It says, and we know that for those who love God, all things work together for good, for those who are called according to his purpose. Okay, so there's something embedded in there already, right? Like, all things work for good. That's the part we really like. And good is defined by all things work for you getting the clerkship that you always wanted as a pre-law student in college or something, right? Like, or all things work together for good. You're going to get the house or whatever, right? Like, all things work together for good. But what the verse says is all things work together for good for those who are called according to, God's purpose, not necessarily your purpose. And then the very next verse, I'm telling you, I'm not making this up. The very next verse is, for those whom he foreknew, he also predestined to be successful and have a good life and never have any trouble in the world. It says, no, that's a lie. For those whom he foreknew, he also predestined. Does anybody know it? To be what? To be conformed to the image of his son, in order that Jesus might be the firstborn among many brothers and sisters. Here's another Mama Jones quote. One thing my mom would always say, she would say, oh, sweetie, whatever happens, the one thing you can be absolutely 100% confident of is that God intends to use it to make you more like Jesus. That might be the best advice my mom had. Of all the amazing things that she said to me, that is actually taking the scriptures at their word. That whatever comes into our life, whatever decision we make, right, wrong, or indifferent, that God will continue to be intimately involved with the outcome of that in terms of how it's forming us more into the image of his son. And here's the reality. The image of Jesus, as we will walk through this Holy Week, is not one of an upward trajectory of worldly success. Right? It is one of self-giving. It is one of profound love. It is one of ultimately sacrifice of his very self. Now, unto glorification, unto resurrection, unto nearness and communion with God, right? But the path there was not a nice, gentle, yellow brick road. Follow, 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 right? Like, you follow, 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 follow Jesus, right? And the guarantee here is not ease and comfort, right? Our desires and God's agenda are often at odds. The other thing that, so interesting, the Proverbs just again and again come back to, and it almost feels practical to the point of being a distraction from these more sort of profound ideas, profound truth, is this. Again and again, it comes back to this idea of seeking counsel. Go to the next slide. The way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but a wise man listens to advice. That is very on the nose, right? Like, without counsel, plans fail, but with many advisors, they succeed. I think one of the reasons why this isn't just good practical advice, though it is, it's very good advice, but why it's biblical wisdom is because one of the essential things about what it means to be human is that we were made to be dependent on God and others. And I think the idea of things tending to go poorly when we don't seek counsel is meant to, over time, teach us and reteach us and send deeper into our souls that reality, that we were never born to be captains of our own ship, full stop, that we are dependent creatures, that we are limited creatures. And those of us who are really smart in certain ways, those of us who are really successful in certain ways, your temptation will always be to project your expertise in one certain area onto all of life. And that can lead to a foolish existence. Because you believe, because I'm good at this one thing, therefore no one can speak into anything in my life. Beware of that. That's what this is talking about. I think one of the easiest ways, if there's a little hack here for biblical wisdom, one of the easiest ways to be wise in your decision making is just simply to seek counsel. And I would say particularly to seek counsel when you're tempted not to, right? There's certain decisions we don't mind input on. Oh, I'm having a couple people over. I was thinking maybe we do pizza or maybe we do, what do you think, right? But talk to a college student about who they're dating and things get real private real quick, right? Like, this is what I learned over 8 years on college campus. I'll never forget this. And thank goodness, he's not here. But there was a student who was dating a girl he did not belong with. And I kept pushing him on this. And I was like, I did not intend to tell the story. I kept pushing him on it. And I was like, bro, you just got to talk to other people. Like, I don't know what to tell you. You're not asking me. Like, I'm like your mentor and you're not even asking me. So I'm like, if you want to know, you can ask. And he wouldn't ask. And so I was like, I'm going to pray for you. And so I prayed for him. And he comes back the next week and he's like, yeah, I broke up with her. And I was like, why? What happened? He's like, I started asking people. And like, my friends were like, nah, bro, no, you don't belong with this girl. And he was like, oh, really? It's that simple? They're like, yeah, dude. And he came back and he was just like, I can't believe how obvious it was. That, I don't know if this is exactly how he put it, but this is how I came to sort of learn from that moment, was I can't believe that it wasn't more obvious to me that as private as I had made this area of my life should have been this massive red flag. As shut off as this part of my decision-making was from the counsel of others, every light on the dashboard should have been going off. Huh, maybe this is one where actually what I'm fearing is the input of other people, maybe because I know the direction it's going to go. But as soon as that input came, here's part of the reason why we resist that input is because then we're accountable to that input. Your four best buddies tell you you shouldn't be with that girl. It's really hard to stay with that girl without taking the relationship even more private and secluded, right? Seek counsel. It's so wise. Okay, one of my favorite passages in the entire Bible is super random. It's in Acts 16, but it's one of my favorite passages, and it's a perfect test case for all of this. And it's not going to look like it at first glance, okay? This is Paul. He's out. Paul was an early Christian missionary and teacher, started a bunch of the first churches in the ancient world, wrote a bunch of the New Testament. So this is sort of a travelogue of his. So he says, and Paul and his companions at the time, they went through the region of Phrygia. You know where that is? And Galatia, having been forbidden by the Holy Spirit to speak the word in Asia, and when they had come to Mysia, you know where that is, they attempted to go into Bithynia. You've been to Bithynia. But the Spirit of Jesus did not allow them. So passing by Mysia, you can picture this, they went down to Troas. You know, Troas, beautiful in the summer. And a vision appeared to Paul in the night. A man of Macedonia was standing there urging him, saying, come over to Macedonia and help us. And when Paul had seen the vision, immediately sought to go into Macedonia, concluding that God had called us to preach the gospel to them. Little travel log, right? A little journal of one of a little event, right? Like, why is this one of my favorite passages? I think it's one of the most practical passages in the entire scriptures. Okay, the emphasis is at the end, right? The cool part is at the end. This dude, a vision appeared to Paul in the night, a man of Macedonia was standing there. I have no idea what that means, right? Like, Paul's asleep, he has a dream. I'm of the ilk that I believe in this stuff. I think the dreams and visions are a way that God communicates to this day. And so he's having a dream, and a man of Macedonia. I don't know, he has like a Macedonia Giants hat on or whatever, right? Like he somehow he knows that he's a man of Macedonia, shows up to him and he's like, come over to Macedonia and help us. And then Paul's like, guys, I think maybe we should go to Macedonia, right? Like that's the part that gets all the attention. What I find so profoundly helpful is everything that comes before that. So Paul knows, because God has shown up to him and spoken to him, hey, you're supposed to go and preach this gospel in the ancient world, especially to Gentiles. You're to start churches. He knows that. A church, the church in Antioch has laid their hands on Paul and his commands and sent them out. So they've been doing this work for a little while. And then randomly, when they go to the region of Phrygia and Galatia, at this point, they're just sort of working. They're working on a very natural arc. This is like going from, you know, D.C. to Philly to New York to Boston, just up, you know, 95 north or whatever. Like, this is a very natural route they're taking. They went through the region of Phrygia and Galatia, having been forbidden by the Holy Spirit to speak the word to Asia. There is no explanation of what that means, which leads us to, from everything else we know about Paul, this could be something very random. Like, you know, one of their visas didn't go through, or, you know, like somehow, you know, someone had a gluten allergy and, you know, all they served there was bread or something. Like, this seems very mundane, everyday stuff that prevents them. And when they had come to Mysia, they attempted to go into Bithynia. So they're like, okay, I guess not there. Let's try Bithynia. But the Spirit of Jesus doesn't allow them. What does that mean? I don't know what that means. It just means they're like, yeah, probably not here. Maybe they can't find a hotel to stay in. Maybe like no one's actually responding in the way that they want. You can imagine at this point, they're probably getting a little frustrated. They're like, look, we're just trying to do our thing here, but we keep being prevented from doing it. So passing by Mysia, they finally go down to Troas, and now this dream shows up. In other words, by and large, you know what Paul and his companions are doing? They're just doing the next thing that makes sense. They're just doing what's put in front of them. They're like, we were just down in Phrygia and Galatia. I guess maybe now we try Mysia. All right, we'll try and go into Bithynia. What I love in this is almost certainly everyday kind of obstacles that they encounter that make them say, yeah, no, I guess not here. But do you see who they chalk it up to? It's really interesting. It's Trinitarian. First, it's the Holy Spirit. Then it's the Spirit of Jesus. And then at the end, they decide that God has called them in. They get very Trinitarian, right? They're acknowledging that, hey, this isn't just about our decisions. There's one who's actually in control here, and he's the one preventing us from doing this. You see, the norm for them is, as I'll say in a second, they just keep it moving. They just keep going. I think of one thing, again, that my mom would say. I actually called my sister this week. I'm like, Jen, I'm talking about decision-making. This feels like mom's wheelhouse. She was like, oh, you know what was always helpful that mom would say is that she would say, hey, does it feel more like God to put this opportunity in front of you and to, like, tempt you with it? Ooh, are you going to do it? Right? Like, I know you got that job offer, but are you going to take it? Or are you going to discern deeply enough that I actually did this as a trick? Right? It's like, probably take the job. Like, God put it in front of you, you know? And if he doesn't want you to do it, he'll prevent you. He'll close doors, right? This is why so often when people come to me as their pastor seeking counsel on decisions, the first thing that I say is, have you gathered all the data you need to actually come to a point where there's a decision to be made? Because if you haven't, just let the data keep coming in, right? Because who knows, right? Like, am I supposed to move to this new place? Well, does the job come through? Does the house come through? Does everything work out here for you to be done? Like, there's a lot of data that has to come in before the moment of decision. That was one of my mom's big things, is that, like, there's no reason to be anxious until all the data's in. And so just let that data come in, right? That's what they're doing, is they're just keeping it moving. And then they're like, all right, Bithynia, let's try it. And they're like, it's not Bithynia. Okay. Do you see that the exception, not the rule, is God's direct intervention into these circumstances? And by the way, the direct intervention, the kind of guidance that we all long for, comes in the midst of them persevering in radical obedience to him. It doesn't come at the front end. It comes in the midst of them being out, moving in the world, being radically obedient to God. And then God is like, all right, you guys clearly aren't getting it. Like, send the Macedonian dream, right? Like, that's the exception. It's not the rule to how God functions in their lives. They're just keeping it moving. They're radically obedient to what he's doing. And then God is like, all right, I'm going to show up and I'm going to tell you guys where I want you to go. The crazy thing about this story, if we had time, crazy thing about the story is that they end up in Philippi, which is where Paul ends up in prison. And he has one convert. He converts Lydia for all intents and purposes. It's the only convert that he gets, and maybe her household, whatever that means. But soon he's in jail because this slave girl, he rebukes her, and people are angry because they ruined their source of income. And he's in jail, right? I could just picture, right? He's in jail, and his companions are like, so that man of Macedonia dream, huh? Right? Like, are you sure he was wearing that hat, right? I actually wonder if it's precisely because the suffering's about to increase that God's like, I'm going to need to give you very specific instructions. And you're going to know that you know that you know that you're supposed to be in this place. And by the way, Philippi becomes the site of by far the healthiest church that we're aware of in New Testament times. Grows from that little seed, right? And so also don't despise those small, the smallness of life sometimes, right? You have no idea what's going to grow from a place of radical obedience. And sometimes that looks like radically going, and sometimes that looks like radically staying. An emphasis on, as a New Jerseyite, sometimes it's radically staying, right? Like, it's hard to stay here, but sometimes those small decisions to just stay and root yourself in a place can lead to things down the road that you just couldn't have imagined. So here's my four things for wise decision making. One, keep it moving, right? Do what's in front of you. This was quoted at our, of all things, this book came out like 14 years ago or something, and it was quoted at our discipleship group this week, but I love the name of it. It is called Just Do Something. Where do I have this? Just Do Something. How to Make a Decision Without Dreams, Visions, Fleeces, Open Doors, Random Bible Verses, Casting Lots, Liver Shivers, Writing in the Sky, etc. Right? Like, there is this reality that a lot of, I used to have a professor who would say 90% of God's will is perfectly clear for your life. He wants you to be like Jesus. He wants you to serve other people. He wants you to be in the church and serving the church. Like, all of that is crystal clear and can happen in a lot of places and in a lot of careers and in all of those things, right? Just do something. Keep it moving. Second, acknowledge God, right? Like, this beautiful verse from Proverbs, trust in the Lord with all your heart. Don't lead on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge him, right? Like, there is one who is over your life, writing a story in and through your life. And so you might want to hear from him every now and then, right? You might want to dialogue with him. You might want to say, in a sit, right? Like, we say, oh, we Christians love to say we're praying about things. And I don't know what your hit rate on that is, but it's not high enough for that to be true every single time I say it, right? Actually pray about it. God, do you have an opinion on this? God, is this circumstance, this opportunity that you've brought in front of me? God, I'm going to, right? You know what my wife and I have learned to pray? God, we're going to do this unless you say no. It feels like you want us to do this, right? But if you prevent it, we're perfectly okay with that. But we're going to do this, right? You might want to dialogue with him in that way. Remember that God's agenda is often different than our own. That if a decision initially, you go, ooh, I don't know if this was the right decision, right? You move to a new place and you're not making friends immediately and you don't love it immediately. Maybe you just moved here and these things tend to be true. When you, right, like realize that God's agenda might be different than the immediate sort of success, happiness, joy, simplicity that you were expecting from a decision. He's forming you in and through it. And then my goodness, seek the counsel of others. Wisdom demands it. At the end of the day, guys, what so much of our decisions come down to, and whether we will do these things or be captains of our own ship, is whether we believe in the goodness of God. Is he good? Is he trustworthy? Right? Can't help but think of this analogy this morning with these parents up here, and I know how these parents have prayed for those two specific ones and what they have suffered for those two specific little ones. And one day, I guarantee you, even sweet Cornelia will tell you, you don't like me or you don't love me or how dare you, right? And you want to say, are you kidding me, right? Do you have any clue? How much more a God who came from heaven's throne, put on human flesh, became one of our own, suffered at infinite cost to himself, bore our sin and shame and death itself on a cross, such that the words that were on his lips, my God, why have you forsaken me? Jesus went to the cross and cried that out in an experiential real moment, such that those words never need cross our lips or, frankly, even our minds. Right? We have a God who loves us eternally. And that was proven once and for all on a cross on a Friday that we bizarrely call good, and we saw that that conquered all of the worst things in this life, that that is more powerful than anything we face in this life. Therefore, he and he alone is to be ultimately trusted with the stories and decisions of our lives. Amen? And so we come to this table where we remember that, where we remember the one who made his goodness eternally both plain to us in its example, but also available to us in its effect in our lives. And so what we do here is we come down these two aisles. There's a gluten-free option in the middle. There's bread on the outside. On the night before he was crucified, Jesus took bread and he said, "This is my body broken so that you might know healing in this life. This is my blood poured out so that your foolishness, so that your bad decisions might be forgiven once and for all. Come and eat of this in remembrance, in acknowledgement of what I have done for you." If you're not at a place where you've made that commitment to Jesus, where you've put your faith in Jesus, we would invite you to do that this morning. Make today the day of your salvation, right? Like, what it comes down to is just saying, this is the point that I got to in college, was I was just like, man, running life on my own, I can sense already it's not working. And I turned and I just said, "Jesus, I think what you have to offer is better than anything that I could bring to the table. And your words are less important than your heart." But if you make that decision, or even if that decision is sort of rumbling in you, make sure you talk to one of us, talk to maybe someone who you came here with this morning. Just say, "Yeah, what would it look like to take that half step that so many of us crazily have, right, in this room, to actually entrust ourselves to the one who is over our lives?" If you're not there yet, the scriptures are very clear. You honor God more by not coming to this table and just kind of considering what you've heard this morning. The band's going to come forward and play for us. Let me pray, and then we'll invite you to come to the table.